Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, please sit back because you are now about to go behind the blue curtain.
Saturday morning. Welcome to Behind the Blue Curtain. I'm your host, Stan Mason. Once again, I got my Facebook Live crew. They're going to be joining in. Good morning, Raymond. So if y'all hear me call out some good mornings to people's names, no, it's not on CNN. You're not going to catch me on Fox, MSNBC, at least not yet. They got to get ready for me. On here, we're going to keep it real. You know, we do a ground level grassroots. And on this show, this is not your grandfather's radio show. On here, everybody's equal. The least are equal. If you're a crack addict in the back alley with an Obama phone and a Wi-Fi connection, when you call up here, you're going to get heard just like the mayor, just like the city council person, just like the police chief, just like the preacher. Everybody is equal here because some people speak through credentials. They got an alphabet soup after a comma behind their name, and they speak on conditions that some of the people see in the Bible. They call these people the least. These people have lived through what those who haven't lived through are teaching about, you know. So on here, we get a chance for everybody to open up. The call-in number is 646-716-4621. You can call in, sound off. You don't give sound bites on here. When you call up, you're in the show. We call this the barbershop. And you're in the show when you call up here. And you're on till you hang up. And everybody gets to give dialogue. You don't have to agree with me. Because if you agree with me, that's boring. Good morning, Stephanie. Good to see you, the homegirl. It's boring if you believe in, you know, just believe everything I believe. I want to learn from people who have an opposed view. That helps me learn. It helps the listeners learn. But on here, be you. You know, say how you feel. Give a perspective that you feel. And what I talk about on here, my ultimate goal, people say, well, why does he do this? You know, first off, I don't have any sponsors. So I don't have to worry about hurting nobody's feelings. I pay for this. So you guys can call up and say how you feel. Nobody's going to cut you off. You don't have to worry about, are we going to upset his ratings? I don't care about ratings. I don't care about Facebook likes. I care about truth. And on here, there are a lot of people who live through a lot of conditions in this country that there's no voice for them. There's no avenue for them. There's no advocate for them. And we see this oftentimes, and these people feel hopeless. Well, on here, they're not hopeless. You know, those who don't have a phone, I'll speak for you as I meet you and see your condition. My ultimate goal is to restore police and community relations, and that means you got to call out some BS. You got to drop some BS flags on some people, cops, citizens, black folks, white folks, preachers. There ain't nobody safe up in here. So don't bring your feelings in here, because in here, it's real. I'm not worried about who unfriends me, who doesn't like what I do, because you know what? Then you move from an interested party to a troll, because you're still going to listen in. And I know that there are some officers that get upset with what I say and the things that I talk about. Stop taking it personal. I'm not talking about any specific department. When I am, I'll tell you I am, and I'll have the facts to back up what I say. But I'm talking about the profession. Policing right now is going through a decline in trust. Now, I know some of you will go, well, no, I don't see that. I back the blue no matter what, and therein lies the problem. You got to get out of your sphere of comfort. See, the police may be one way in your neighborhood, you know, when and if they ever come there. And I'm not saying all police officers are bad. By and large, the vast majority are good. But what brings this show about today is people wonder why. Why is there so much resentment toward police? Why is there so much animosity toward police? It's not anti-police. It's people are not comfortable talking to police. And a lot of officers even wonder, well, why? Why won't they talk to me? Well, you know, James Baldwin had a quote. I can't believe what you say because I see what you do. And we see after every riot, the chief comes out, the big figurehead, the main man behind everybody's department. And he gives these long speeches of promises change. We're going to become a more transparent department. We're going to become a more culturally diverse department. We're going to try to become more sensitive to the community needs, but you never see it. Some of the issues that have caused this disconnect between police and the community, these things didn't happen last month. These things did not come about last year. These are generational things. We're seeing the culmination today of things that, you know, my father complained about, my grandfather complained about, I'm complaining about. And everybody can't be wrong. And so they say, well, you post negative police things. No, I don't post negative police things. I post negative things that are happening to people. And here it is. Because we live in the era of social media, things are captured. You can't do these things in the dark anymore. Social media has provided a light to bring these things to the light. Well, why don't you post when the cops buy a kid a new bike? You know, that's great and that's all well and good. But buying that kid a bike is not going to do anything about the guy that shot on the other side of the country unarmed. Buying a bike is not going to do anything for the guy that's locked up because somebody planted drugs on him. Now, folks say, well, that doesn't happen. Yes, it absolutely happens. You don't believe me? Look at Baltimore. You got seven officers down there right now, and those are just the ones that get caught. So today, this isn't so much for the civilians to listen to. This is for the cops to listen to. I hope you share it. I don't care if you like me, you don't like me. I guarantee you, you're going to click on next week because you're going to troll. You're not going to come on live, but you're going to get the download. And you don't have to worry. My Facebook page is public. I don't hide anything that I do. You can see it. I'm going to tell you, I don't speak department, the officers, civilian employees, or the citizens of Waco. I speak for myself. This is my personal and professional experiences. Some of y'all might get a little, well, I don't see why he feels like that. Well, see, I don't get to take off and unzip the blackness when I'm off. I got to wear this suit all the time. So therefore, depending on where I go and the current state of policing, I'm subject to everything that's happening to everybody else. Just because I'm a police officer doesn't give me, I don't have I don't hate to say Trump card. I don't have a card that I can drop that's going to get me out of whatever somebody's going to do. But I'm not going to wait until I'm a victim of some of the same things that we're seeing out here to speak up. And that brings us into what we're talking about today. My title for this show is A Few Bad Apples. Because I picked that because every time we see one of these egregious incidents, I'm not talking about questionable, the public doesn't have all the information. I'm talking about things like what happened to Walter Scott. You know, I'm talking about things that happened to Terrence Crutcher up there in Tulsa, Oklahoma. I'm talking about Tamir Rice. I'm talking about things that Stevie Wonder could look at and go, that doesn't make any sense. And Ray Charles will say, I'll see what you're talking about. These type of incidents. And I'm wondering, where are the officers? See, this is why the community, particularly not just all the black community, particularly even the low-income community, has taken a step back. And said, I don't know when I call 911 what I'm getting. I'm not quite sold. I could get that once. Because when you see these things, you know, the Baltimore incident, seven officers, corrupt, rotten to the core, planting drugs on people, robbing drug dealers. Where's the fraternal order of police out on this? Where are officers across this country speaking out on this? They'll say, oh, it's none of my business. It's not my department. It's none of my business. But then you want to complain when somebody approaches you on the street 2,000 miles away and says, hands up, don't shoot. Well, why are they coming to me like that? I ain't got nothing to do with that. Well, maybe because you didn't say nothing about it. Now, I get paid, and officers get paid, to go into situations and look at if there's a violation or if there's something wrong. And then we are professional guilt seekers. That's what we do. We can go in and we know what to look for to prove that you did or did not do something. We're good at it. We do these things called making cases, which result in people going where? to jail. We do it for a living. They send us to training classes to be able to do this. But then when it comes to, I don't care if they're caught red-handed, elbow in the cookie jar, officers who have done wrong, you hear nothing from Blue Lives Matter. You hear nothing from police officers, police associations, up to chiefs of police associations, fraternal order of police. You don't hear anything about that, but let somebody do something to an officer. The wagons are circled, and the media kicks in. And I'm here to say enough of that. Let the punishment fit the crime. Strip away all that and let the courts do their job. I would hazard a guess to say a lot of jurors are brainwashed when they go into these incidents. They can't bring themselves to convict an officer. And that was proof in the Walter Scott case. The first jury was a hung jury because one juror said flat out, I can't find myself able to convict the police officer. Never mind the fact that the cell phone video showed this man shot seven times in the back, jogging away in slow motion. And the jury saw all of that. So when we say, well, where is justice? And then the media comes on, well, you know, they'll get some guy that'll come in, and he's 30, 40-year police officer, retired. Well, it's just a few bad apples. No, it's not a few bad apples. I'm sorry. That played out probably a generation and a half ago. I say the bushel is bad, not the apple cart. The apple cart being the profession. I say the bushel, which is that particular group of officers that were at that event, who do reports to cover each other's butt, who plan evidence, who hide evidence. I got no sympathy for these officers that are listening. If you get bent out of shape and twisted, it's too bad. But when we got to plant evidence to convict people and cover people, you know it's wrong because we put people in jail for doing that very thing. And this doesn't get called out. We are public servants. We're not gods. We're not infallible. We all make mistakes. Whether it's they pushed their wife, they did a DWI, they did whatever, but let whatever happens to the citizen happen to us. Well, you know, all those years of public service for which we got paid. And well, do we make what a lot of people think we should make? Maybe, maybe not. But we don't have to go far within any city that we work in. We don't have to go far to find people making a hell of a lot less than we make and having to put up with more BS than we put up with. Yes, we got to deal with some rough people. Yes, sometimes you got to fight. Yes, sometimes you got to be called names. But I'll tell you what, that lady at the Whataburger window or the McDonald's window at 3 o'clock in the morning when the club lets out going through a whole lot more verbally than what we go through for a lot less money. So I said, you know, we got to get over this. This is a stumbling block in police reform and police community relations. We got to confront this head on. Don't wait for it on major media because they're not going to talk about it. Because you got to talk about some things and that add into this. Why do some of these things happen? Perfect example. Police training is generally done by, and we're going into the education phase of this. Police training is usually done, if it's not in-house, they'll contract somebody who's a specialist. And they got a comment into their name and usually an alphabet soup. And they come in and they teach these classes on the very conditions that the people they're teaching about are living through. I went to a cultural diversity class about 5-10 years ago, and we're all sitting in this room, about 200 officers. The gentleman stands up, highly credentialed. I'm not going to say where he was from. He was a college professor. Had a comma behind his name and a bunch of alphabets. And he spent about maybe 3 to 5 minutes, gave all his qualifications and accolades to teach this subject. Cultural diversity, helping police understand different cultures. And he was white. And he started out, the first segment was how white people view the police, followed by how black people view the police. 15-minute break, we come back, a little discussion. And he says, we're going to lunch. Does anybody have a question? Well, those of you that know me, you know I had a question. I said, well, do I need to come back after lunch? He said, well, yeah, these are credited hours. You need them towards your license, your yearly training, so on and so forth. I said, I'm not being rude or disrespectful, but quite frankly, I didn't learn anything from you the first half of this class, and I'm not going to learn anything the second half of this class. And he looked shocked. All these credentials. I mean, what are you talking about? I'm qualified. I'm certified and this and that. I said, you know, you spent the first hour talking about how white people view the police. Yes, you're right. But you can tell me how white people who make six figures a year view the police. You can't tell me how middle class and poor white people who see the police constantly view the police because you haven't been there. You're unqualified to speak about that. Then you spent the second hour telling me how black people view the police. So I'll ask you, when was the last time you were black? Do you know what it's like to walk into a store and have all eyes on you? Do you know what it's like to say, well, if I go buy a nice car, I'm going to get pulled over and ask why I got the nice car. If I buy a beat-up car, I'm going to get pulled over because they wonder if I'm carrying drugs. If I walk down the street, they're going to stop me because I'm suspicious. If I stand here, they're going to stop me for standing here. These are real things. And for the officers that are listening, oh, that doesn't exist. That's what we said about racial profiling for a generation and a half. Until now, you know, Congress, we got to go through all these hoops now for racial profiling. So, yes, it's real. And I just find it hard sometimes that folks can believe in UFOs, ghosts, Bigfoot, leprechauns, the Loch Ness Monster, but they have a problem believing in racial profiling. They have a problem believing that policing needs to change. It's stunning. It just shocks the mind. And then you have these chiefs that come out, and chiefs, you're going under the gun, and you're going to be under the gun all the time. You know, you come out, you're responsible for these officers. You write the policies, chiefs. You know what your officers are doing or not doing. Why is it that we cannot get any type of freedom to those street officers that allows them, you want them to communicate with the public, take the noose off. Take the muzzle off. Let them talk to the community. Let them be honest with that community because you know what, Chief? They're not sitting in an office up on the top floor or in a building far, far away. They're out there in the real thick of it where their credibility and their reality is violent. They don't have a secretary. They have a handheld microphone. There's nobody to take a message for the street officers. We're going to whatever issue is out there. And oftentimes we're handcuffed behind a bunch of political nonsense. Well, if you say this, it'll make the city look bad. If you say this, it'll make the department look bad. Well, if the department needs to look bad, isn't it better that I say it than the citizens mount up in the department with signs and say it? See, these are called protests. And folks get upset about protests. Why are they protesting? It's inconvenient. That's what protests are designed to do, be inconvenient. Officers need to have the freedom to be able to have dialogue, real, truthful dialogue with the public. Allow officers to talk to the public without being subject to sanctions. You're going to get written up. You're going to get days off. You shouldn't have said this. The chief is mad because you said this. Well, I haven't seen the chief in a year. I wouldn't know if he's mad, has a beard now, or what. But I see these people out in the street every day who are struggling to survive. I see these business owners that are trying to do things in communities, that are struggling to keep their business afloat. When's the last time the chief's been in those businesses? When's the last time the administrators have been to those businesses, been over to this neighborhood that even knows the problem? They haven't come down and asked me what I think the problems are. There are good officers out there that want to make a difference in their community. But I'm telling y'all, they're handcuffed. But to the officers, when you see these things, why aren't you speaking up? I can understand if it's in your department, an open investigation, much like my department. If there's an ongoing case, I can't talk about it. It's not that I don't want to. I can't. It's an ongoing investigation, and I won't. But I will speak on things from my experience and profession, and sometimes officers are going to be right, and in my opinion, I'll tell y'all. But officers have got to stop looking at these things that happen and remaining silent, because that is why the public is growing, a segment of the public, and not just black folks. Middle-class folks are coming along, and they're going, I don't know. How do you look at seven officers in Baltimore convicted of planting drugs and not start to, if you live in Baltimore, not question the entire department? insulated themselves properly with the community. They're more worried about developing friendships and lifelong friendships within the police department than they walk into a community that they serve. You're like, there are citizens that will come to your aid quicker than police officers because they're right there. What is your connection? When you walk out the door and go into your area, are you connected to it? Do you know anybody there? That's your office. Do you keep the public at a distance from you? Because when you do these things, the public does not trust you. They understand. Trust me. The streets understand when you're standoffish. The streets understand when you won't drop a BS flag on a stinking pile of BS that needs one thrown on it. Well, I don't want to talk about it. Then you go in the barbershops. Hey, brother, no. You know, then you got these chiefs. And it's not to call out this particular chief. It's just when I saw it, kicked me off to another level. The ex-police chief of Atlantic City, New Jersey. He calls out police brutality and says it needs to be changed. Well, gee, ex-chief, I'm glad you finally got on board with the rest of the folks, including the victims of it. Some are here, some are dead, for the need for police reform. Where were you, chief, when you were running that department? And not just this chief, but all these chiefs. Where were you when you were in a position to affect change within your department? You're the one who called the play in the huddle. You're the one that called when the ball was snapped. You're the field general. Where were you then when you could have made a difference? Now you're retired and you want to speak up. Wait. You didn't speak up, chief, because you care about that community. You didn't speak up because you care about police reform. You spoke up because you were subpoenaed and told to go to a trial where you're sworn to tell the truth. Where would you have been had that subpoena not come? Would we have heard from you? What about all the officers who come out of the woodwork that finally want to speak up about police reform? I mean, welcome in. We appreciate your advice. But why did you wait till you were fired? And because something happened to you, now you're motivated to speak up about everything. There's been a hell of a lot of victims before you. They're called citizens. But now, because it's personal, you got done wrong, so now you want to speak out. Or the ones who've retired. Well, my pension's solid. I can go ahead and speak up now. See, the difference between a moment and a movement, Joe Madison says, is sacrifice. People want to know you got skin in the game. You can have all the right words, but when you got nothing to lose, you have nothing on the table, people are going to question your credibility, your integrity, your commitment. And this is something, police reform isn't going to happen overnight because it's cultural conditioning. Police are conditioned to look at black and brown and poor. And I'm going to say this, officers of truth. No, not me. I ain't talking about you. I'm talking about the profession. We are conditioned to see the poor as the threat. That black guy is the suspicious person, is the threat. If you don't believe me, pull the statistics and look at them. That poor white guy is the threat. That tan guy is probably illegal. I better stop him. Why we got racial profiling laws. You think I'm lying? I didn't dream these up. Department of Justice put them in place. Because we have not come out of this box and met people at their problem. And then when we got there as police, say, I don't know what to do. Stop taking ownership of the problem. Let them tell you what they want you to do. Then you say, I can or can't do that. And you work with that community to solve that problem. But when you refuse to accept the responsibility for some of the problem, and when you have high crime in an area, yes, the citizens commit the crimes, and yes, citizens can be a hell of a lot more involved than they are in these high crime areas. I'm not absolving them of any responsibility. But I'm saying that police departments, municipalities in general, there is crime does pay. It's called gentrification. When cities surrender neighborhoods, because when enough people move out and we get enough burnout buildings and we get enough dilapidated buildings, we'll come in and buy it cheap. Then we'll just rezone it, redistrict it, and we'll price these people out of the community. And I got news for you poor folks that don't want to try to improve your life. Guess what? When they do price you out, you got nobody to blame but yourself. Don't tell me what the white man did to you. You know what? If you got abandoned buildings in your neighborhoods and all you're doing is peeing in them, prostituting out of them, gambling out of them, shooting dice in them, smoking weed in them, don't get mad when that guy comes from over in Pakistan or whatever and opens up a store. Don't get mad at him. I don't want to hear what they just coming and taking over. You had the opportunity. Seize the opportunity. So there's enough blame in this for everybody. But I think the police have to first step up and say, it's more than a few bad apples. We've got to do a self-forensic. We need an autopsy. We need an autopsy on policing in this country. Not necessarily at the local level. Federal government. You got money to waste investigating a whole bunch of nonsensical BS. Why don't you drop a serious study on policing in America, and you need to drop down some regulations, some laws, some rules, some guidelines, some, you know, benchmarks. Because we got departments, 1,000 departments, 10,000 departments doing things 10,000 different ways. And citizens don't know what to expect. Marijuana is legal here, but it's not legal here. I can have my medical marijuana here, but if I go over here and I fly on the plane because it's my prescription, when I get off the plane, they're going to put me in jail. Then I'll have to post a big old bond over here in this state to have it forgiven later, but I don't get my money back, and I need it because now I don't have a house. We create criminals. We've got so many different rules, and I'm not talking about city ordinances. Within the states, we have so many different chaotic things. Officers don't know what they're doing. Chiefs don't know what they're doing because they don't communicate effectively with their officers. Not every chief, but by and large. Because they're too busy making administrative decisions. Which, as I said last week on the show, personally, I think civilians with a degree in human resource management should be making those decisions. But when do we get to the point where we as a profession, not an individual department, not individual officers, but as a profession, because if you're an officer, aren't you tired yet of being embarrassed by some of the crap that we're seeing? Where's the fraternal order of police and stuff? I ain't heard a word from them in reference to Baltimore. At what point do the police unions denounce some of this stuff? We can call on the president to denounce white supremacists. We can call on this group to denounce this. But the police haven't denounced anything. And so I can't even remember the last time a police union stepped out and said, we denounce, categorically denounce, a particular incident. You leave the community with too many question marks, and it makes the community say, James Baldwin, I can't believe what you say because I see what you do. You know, Freddie Gray, perfect example. Whether Freddie Gray deserved to be stopped or arrested is irrelevant. He was in the care, custody, and control of the police and ended up dead. And nobody went to jail. I don't know all the facts of the trial, but I'm saying if I have care, custody, and control of somebody and they end up dead at the end of it, obviously something went wrong. And we don't know what went wrong. Did somebody hit a pothole? Did he not have a seatbelt on? Well, if I'm driving a car and I've got a passenger with no seatbelt on and I hit a pole and that person dies, aren't they going to hold me liable for that death? They ran my car, I should have told them to put a seatbelt on. Now, if I get stopped, they get the ticket. But if I'm the cause of their death, I can be held liable for that. But when Freddie Gray died, nobody's liable. I don't care what his record was. He's a human being. We got to stop throwing people's past history up as an excuse to justify their death or to justify the facts of not digging deeper or not holding someone accountable. These are the things the public sees when the public says, I don't like the police. I've got friends that will tell me point blank, I don't like the police. And I'll take it personal. I'll say, why? Well, why aren't they doing this? Why don't they talk about this? Those are all relevant, good questions. But where are these people going to be able to voice that concern? Oh, well, you can go up and tell the chief. Now, you know what? That sounds good on paper. Good to say, well, the chief has an open door policy with the community, but we all know when you walk out of there, that's going to be given to somebody else to put on their plate to go handle. And maybe it gets handled, maybe it doesn't. But we don't get results. We've got a Department of Justice right now under Jeff Sessions that's thinking about pulling consent decrees, not really interested in gathering any type of reform forcing any type of reform, mandating any type of reform to some of these police departments who have a rogue element within them operating with impunity, victimizing citizens across the board. And thank God for people who video. Keep videoing. If it's legal where you are, by all means do it. I have no problems with anybody out there when I'm at work filming me. Lord knows I'm on here enough. I don't care. I'm going to be me all the time, because until we get put under the gun, by the gun, I mean video and public pressure, policing will not change. And if you sit around waiting on officers within police departments to stand up and speak for the citizens, you'll be waiting a long-ass time. And it's really rather ironic, because we take an oath to protect and serve the public, not the mayor, not the chief, not the city council, not the badge, not the profession, but the public. And that public means the rich folks, the poor folks, the middle class, the black, the white, the atheist, the gay, the straight, the homeless, the drug addicted, the sex offenders. We're there to protect them, not to look at their lifestyle or their color or their religion and divvy out how much service we think you should get. Therein lies the BS right there. Somebody asked me, they said, you know, are you really, I had some friends that wondered if you were really a police officer or not. I said, I'll tell you what you do. You tell them they can go to my website, they can look at my videos, they can reach out to me on Facebook, they can look at this show, they can call in and ask me. You know, I'm speaking for the least, and it's frustrating because I have to go out there and see these least suffering. They're waiting on some change. Yes, some of them cause their own conditions. But if we don't guide them out of it, my job is to serve the public. That means responding to murders. That means responding to domestics. But that also means finding that hungry person a meal. It means finding that person a warm space when it's cold outside, no matter what it takes. That, to me, is just as important as going off, finding out who broke in a car. There's going to be crime when I'm gone and when every officer out here working. You're not superhuman. When you go in the dirt, crime's going to be going on. When you go home, crime is going to be going on. You're trying to please that chief. When he's gone, crime is going to be going on. You're living for this profession. Let me tell you. And I got to call on 203. I'm going to get to you in a minute. I'm going to tell you all this, and this is real talk. For you young guys coming in this job, and all your friends are cops, and you took the citizens and put them over here, and all you want to talk about is guns and police stuff and get your wives involved in it, and we're all one big blue family, that's a BS. I'm going to drop a BS flag on that too. Because you know what? When you retire, like an NFL player, doesn't matter that you led the league in rushing, how many Super Bowls you won. When you retire, the team doesn't call you anymore. They're playing games. They're practicing. If you surrounded yourself only with, you know, officers, only with police people, then you retire and you're part of the community, and nobody wants to talk to you because you've been a jerk for 25 years. And then the people you worked with, they don't have time for you. They're busy. Because when you retired, somebody moved up on the seniority chain. They're the big dog now. They're getting that big dog attention. So what do? You sit home, and what's supposed to be your best years of your life, your retirement, you're disconnected from a community that could care less about you because you were a jerk to people. You were disconnected, and then you end up drinking yourself to death, dying of a heart attack, or smoking a gun. That's a sad way to go. And then they'll say, he was a public servant. Some of us are not public servants. Some of us are public predators. Some of us are public tyrants. We cause more chaos in the community than we do restoring order. And some of you know who you are, and some of you who work with those people know who they are. But you won't speak up. No. I'm going to go to the call of 203 area code 1513. What's up? Hey, Pierre, how you doing, brother?
Good morning, Stan. How are you? It's Charlie.
What's up, Charlie? How you doing?
Doing pretty good, my friend. Wow, you said a lot. I've been sitting back here and listening. I also saw that article in the paper, as a matter of fact. It hit all the papers up here in the north about the Atlantic City police chief And there was another one that circulated too about a sheriff or sheriffs in the South that are allowed to keep money that is unspent from campaigns that is usually supposed to go to feeding, housing, medical care for prisoners under their care. And they're allowed to keep that if something is unspent. And one guy was allowed to keep damn near $250,000, which he bought a beach home. So I think when people see things like that, yeah, there is definite mistrust in the public. But I also have to look at it from a civilian's point, looking at it at a police officer's point. You guys have to serve 20, 25 years to get your pension. And when you see an FBI officer like Andrew McCabe, who thought he was doing the right thing, 2 days before he's supposed to collect his 30-year pension, he's fired over nonsense. I think once we get the politics out of law enforcement, and I mean all aspects
absolutely
of law enforcement, then we'll start seeing the changes that we as a nation need to occur to get rid of all this racism, to get rid of racial profiling and all other aspects that are thrown in there because of these few bad apples that constantly make people's lives nuts, to be honest with you. The ones that are wearing the badge and the ones that are receiving this negativity. But I'm just going to say, because I just want to listen to this, but I just want to say, as long as we get the politics out of law enforcement, then things will just start to change.
You know, Charlie, I mean, I want you to comment back on what I'm about to say, because this is going to twist some people the wrong way, but that's okay. That's why I'm here. I can take it. While we're getting the politics out of policing, let's get the religion out of it too. Okay? Let's get the religion out. Because I am paid to serve the Christian, like the Muslim, like the atheist, like the Jew, like the Hindu, like the Buddhist. There's too much religion in the policing morals also. Let's just have us deal with the facts. You know, when we did the gun show on the school shootings, what did we hear? We need God back in the schools. We need God back in the schools. You know what? Whatever your God is, if he's in you and you go into school, God is in the school. We don't need to cross on the wall, the Ten Commandments on the wall. Because when people say, let's go back to when God was in the school, I'm assuming 40s, 50s, maybe 60s. Then I say, okay, well, when your God was in the school, I wouldn't know anything about that because being a person of color, I wasn't allowed to go to your school because your God was in there, but so was segregation. And so was racism. And so was hatred. And so was race. How about we put education back in the schools? How about we put order and discipline back in the school? If you've got God in you, that's great. Bring him inside of you and let him shine from within you. God doesn't need to be announced. He doesn't need an announcement. We've got politicians out here who have taken policing and they use it as their bully stick. Mostly in the federal government we're seeing, but it exists. We're like a pit bull. When they want to sick us on somebody, they sick us on somebody. It's funny how the resources come out of the low-income areas, the places that need the most help, and get shifted because one of these special interests, one of these business people have a concern. So we're going to shift resources. Don't think the street officers, when we're sitting in roll call, I got news for the chiefs. Those of you that don't go to roll calls, maybe you should. Don't think we don't look like, what the hell? I need to be over here doing this. They want me to go over there and do that. Why? Why am I going over there? Because of special interest. Get to learn your police department's officers, talk to those citizens. Citizens, talk to those officers. Politics and religion have ruined policing. It ruined it. Everybody's got a different denomination and a different view of their God, never mind different religions, and you take that and you put that into a law enforcement capacity, and then you say, oh, we're a policing unit, we're free from religion. We treat everybody the same. And you got in God we trust on your police cars? And you can say, well, we're not saying what God. Well, what if I'm atheist and don't believe in God? I'm going to feel real comfortable with that. And now, some folks who are Christian or different religions, their feelings will get hurt by that. But therein lies what I'm talking about. Religion has no place in policing. Politics has no place in policing. Chief, you've got to be a politician. Go do what you do. But you're that buffer. When you bring it to us to enforce on the street, it's up to you to divide and remove the political BS out of the statutes, out of the general orders. Just give us the straight diet, because we're out there serving a community that's starving. So there is too much politics in policing. There is too much religion in policing, taking us back to the topic of why are communities distrustful? Why is the Muslim community distrustful of policing? Maybe because policing operates in a more morally Christian-based philosophy. Not to say every officer is a Christian, but that's morally the compass that our country goes in. So that Muslim person is going to feel uncomfortable. That gay person may feel uncomfortable because Christian morals may dictate that being gay is wrong. So how do you expect these people to react? The officers bring up religion at work. They'll say, don't talk about religion at work. You can't. Well, the whole preface that motivates us is politics and religion. When we come out there on the streets, we like to say that we're straight and by the book. The officers on the street may be, but the policies aren't. The policies aren't. If you've got a department that has a bunch of Christian chaplains, then where's the Muslim chaplain? Where's the Buddhist chaplain? Where's the Hindu chaplain? And if you haven't searched for it and haven't looked for it, and a lot of departments, I'm calling you out right now, and you know who you are. If you haven't looked for these things, then you deserve to be under the gun. Just take God all the way out of policing. He has no place in that. If I'm going to do kind and do good for somebody, I'm going to do it because it's my decision to do it, and God is in me, and I'm going to do it. But I don't need to be legislated or mandated to do it that way. Mm-hmm. Does that make any sense to you, Charlie?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I'm thinking today, being St. Patrick's Day, those people in New York know that that is a – they consider it a holiday, basically. But the Catholic Church is an extremely big part of the New York Police Department in a lot of things. And they always have the cardinal there. I know in Bridgeport, same thing. When you have a huge Catholic following, the Catholic Church is a huge part of local police departments. And like you just said, what about the Muslim police? So what about the Baptist police, the Methodist police, the Jewish police?
Well, let me ask you this, Charlie. The Irish are a big part of not just Connecticut and New York area, but Northern policing period, and I know they do a lot for St. Patrick's Day. I understand that.
Mm-hmm.
What'd they do for Juneteenth? What a thought.
Mm-hmm.
And therein lies, when we bring the politics in, we automatically recognize, and my brother TKD, I know he's going to jump on this. See, we recognize history. History. His story. His story.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got a segment of the community, black, white, poor, others, said, what about my story? When is it my turn? I'm black in a poor-ass neighborhood, or I'm white in a poor-ass neighborhood, or Mexican in the poor. When is it my turn? When is somebody going to come ask me, how would I like to see my neighborhood policed? You go out and ask the people with six figures and gated communities on how I should be policed, which is tantamount almost to you know, overseeing slaves. But when are you going to go into these areas where these people are suffering and ask them, do you have an answer? What can we do different? How can we better serve you? How would you like to see us police you? What can we do to help? We never do that. We go to power players, businessmen, and politicians to come say how the low-income community, who doesn't have a chance in hell and no resources, how it can get better. So we dictate a policy, and we go to these people, and we take our form of policing and shove it down their throats, and then charge them with resisting if they don't like it or disorderly conduct.
Well, I also think it's kind of terrible, too, when they open these substations in poor communities. They'll keep them open for maybe 6 months. Then all of a sudden it's the excuse, well, we don't have money enough to keep them open, or we can't afford to have officers stop by there. And it's like, well, why did you do it in the first place? Or why do you only go when it's time for candidates to run for office, or like you just said, they'll go to the black church when they want to talk about something that's a problem in the black community or something that's a hot topic, and they want to act like they care. It's like that old saying you say, don't say nothing, or I see what you say, but I see what you do.
Yep.
I can't believe what you say because I see what you do.
Excuse me. What you do.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm sorry, I'm going to say this, and it's going to offend some people, but I'm going to say it anyway because it needs to be said. And a lot of the poor black communities who we have these people called leaders, we wonder why things can't get done. I'm going to tell you all why. Here it comes. Like old guy said in Living Color, like to hear it, here it goes. We have black leaders who, when people rise up against something, and by rise up, I'm not talking about burning down buildings. I'm talking about they voice a concern, and they say, we're going to go out there and protest. We're going to do whatever. And you get your city officials, your business officials, your key players, and they're all white. Some of them are black. That if it's going to affect their business, they'll call Reverend Goodfoot or whoever it is and say, you know, you need to go over there to your people and calm them down, and we'll do something for you. Then you get that emergency prayer meeting. You get that emergency group. We need to just, you know, let's take a step back, everybody, and just wait on the Lord. Let's pray about this for about 6 years and wait on the Lord. Meanwhile, nothing is getting done. Now, for the Christians listening, they say, oh, that sounds anti-God. No. No. See, we're waiting on the Lord, and the Lord's waiting on us. We can't say that we serve an on-time God, and he's on time, and we're lagging behind. Praying God's places we want to take him to. Listening to some of these people who are never at the problem. They're never there. Till the media's there. Then they're the expert. How many times do you hear conditions, the low-income conditions, the poverty, the drug abuse, the neglect, the homelessness, the fatherless families, the incarceration rates? How many times are these things discussed Wednesday night prayer service? Never. So there's a community explosion. Then that opens up a place for the headline. Got to make the media. Reverend Soundbite. Bishop Bullhorn. But when it comes time to roll up your sleeves, there's nobody out there but the poor people who have to live in the park and that street officer that has to deal with it. Did you want to follow up, Charlie? Because I'm going to leave your mic open. You're here, so, you know, I'm going to leave you open.
You're right on course, brother. I'm just going to sit back and listen. Put my GPS on. You're doing great.
Okay, right now, my brother, TKD. In the house, my ace in the bullpen. Mic is open, brother. I know you want to get some of this.
Yeah, good morning. Absolutely, man. The sad thing about it is just like what you stated, is if we're going to fix or correct things, then we have to address it. And then we have to undress it. And when I mean undress it, as the show states, behind the blue curtain. Unfortunately, there are those, we're talking about those who don't represent the high morals and integrity and professionalism that should be exhibited by all police officers. They hide behind that badge, and you wear it to represent it, not wear it to become a badger, you know. And anybody know about the honey badger, y'all might know the metaphor I'm using with this. A honey badger is a bad boy, okay, or a bad girl. And they use a phrase, man, why are you badgering me? You look at when someone takes the oath, and some of them have that right to have filled a certain sense of entitlement. Not that it's right, but I can understand it. Putting your life on the line every day. And then there's a lot of things you see out in the street that upset you, that that really, let's say, get you mad. And what I'm saying in sense mad, not in sense that you're crazy, you go mad, but I think the illusion is that police officers aren't real people with real problems and real challenges. And when you get to the root cause of what's bothering them, too many times it's too late by time you'll find out what happened, be it, you know, as they say in the law enforcement field, there's a high divorce rate. So if there's a high divorce rate, that means they're having challenges even coexisting with someone that's supposed to be their better half or greater half, or they say their significant other at home. So if they're having a hard time doing that at home, well, I don't think it's going to be that easy for them to handle the stress and the responsibilities, duties, and obligations, unfortunately, that happen in the street. Again, divorce rate is high. There's a high rate of alcohol consumption, drinking by police officers. It's typically known. This ain't no secret. And there's also, as you said in your statement about the loneliness rate, there's a high loneliness rate. I know people are not used to that phrase, but we have to refine these things. Why do officers who have dedicated so much of their lives to the public, at the end of their careers, like you said, feel almost like they have no one to turn to other than their fellow officers? And if that's the only group of people that you bonded with during your whole career, then you really wasn't much of a public servant. You was basically one of the guys that were the blue coats, let's say, and that became your voice. But if you effectively community, as they say, community police, then you would have a list, a whole laundry list of people who would, let's say, not come to bat with you, would come and break bread with you. You know, I think too many times that you have people and because see, when you become that officer, and when I look at officers, I don't look at them from the standpoint of behind the blue curtain or even with a badge. I look at the human aspect of it. And I understand that a lot of people have, through years, because of a system that's inherently corrupt, have been suppressed.
Absolutely.
And we have people who now have gained power. And as I said in previous shows, power is a very tricky thing, man, because it can and will corrupt people if they're not, if the proper checks and balances are not put in place. And not just put in place on a piece of paper, but as you said earlier, brother, enforced. Because you have people making life and death situations. They have the power to retain people, stop them. They have the power to take things from them, to impound their vehicles, take them out the car, put them in handcuffs. They have a power to take your life. They have a they have the power to turn your financial situation into a turmoil. Because now after dealing with this officer, now you might have to make bond or make bail. You got fines now. You got to take time off work. You got to go to court. That's a lot of power, man, that a person has. And I'm not saying for officers to go out there and don't protect themselves, but I'm saying in a sense of community, if you're going to be part of the community experience to make things better, then we know don't create a bad experience when you don't have to. You know, we know there's going to be bad experiences because there's some bad people out there you got to deal with. And I pray for all officers who go out there. You can't soft shoe every stop, or you can't soft shoe every call. There's some people who are going to come at you. And yes, if they want to play for bad, then you got to give it to them bad. I support you all the way with that. If you want to talk shit, you want to, not that talking should lead to a bad situation, but I'm saying that. That part of the policing, I think one of the more focuses should be, and this is going to take a certain attitude and a certain bravery and a commitment or a conviction to create better experiences with the public. But that's hard if you're walking around in your spirit with envy, with jealousy, with this sense of entitlement, or as they say, the God complex. I call it the devil complex because they say the devil is alive. As far as the religious people, a lot of times say that. Okay, so then there's a lot of lines. There's some relationship problems going on, like I said, at home. So out in the street where you don't really have a connection with that person other than they're in your area that you may patrol. If you're having a problem with your kids at home or your wife or your ex-wife, you're going through relationship problems or divorce, maybe you have a kid that's struggling to get through school. Police officers are real people with real problems and challenges. And we've got to make sure you look at that from the root. They may be suffering right now from some financial difficulties. They may be having health conditions or problems that a lot of people don't know about. So there's a lot of things that we got to take in consideration when you look at being officers. And when I mean officers, I mean all of us. Because we have a duty and responsibility to each other. Just like we want the police to be more community active, well, then people from the community, they got to reach out to police officers more. And not because they're wearing a blue uniform and they got a badge and they got a gun. No, is that look at them as they're human beings first. Deal with them like that, you know, because I understand the personal safety. That's the law of nature, the law of what we know preservation is. The first law of preservation or the law of life is self-preservation. So it's personal safety has to come first. That goes for each and every last one of us. But we also have a personal responsibility for whatever actions or words that come from us or come out of our mouth. And so you got to have that attitude and bravery and commitment or conviction to be truthful, to be truthful. Stop lying. But see, as I said before, why would people be hung up? And when I say hung up, in court, this is the game of life. Let's call it like that. I'm going to use this as an analogy, or let's use it as a parable. You're hung up, and what happens? You're hung up just like the jury gets hung up. There's a hung jury because people have a hard time thinking that somebody in that position or that title, or in this case, that officer, can or did do something like that. But let's look at all the evidence. And once we get the evidence and we investigate it, like you said, brother, having an autopsy, or we need the forensic science, so to be, we do it for any other criminal. Criminal doesn't have a broad brush. I don't call that a broad brush. Anybody who does criminal activity is a criminal, regardless what title they have, CEO, president, it doesn't matter. So we get caught up in the optics of the title. So just as you have racial profiling, we have this radical profiling. Because, see, until we get to court, other than that, we don't swear to tell the truth to help us God. No, we should be blessed to tell the truth. But we know you don't get blessed when you tell the truth a lot of times. You get cursed. You get ostracized. You get even politicized when you tell the truth, depending on who's going to, as they say, benefit from that. So let's understand this. Let's interrogate. Let's investigate, yes. But I say let's invigorate that when we are looking at our lives, don't just say big brother's watching you, do you have cameras? If you're truly a godly person or a godly inspired person, or a person, when I say God, I'm saying all spiritual-based, if you want to say religions, I like to use the word discipline that people use, then you should know at all points in your life you are being watched by a higher power, by a grand architect or creator of us all, regardless what title or what phrase or expression you want to use. That's beside the point. So if we're really in, if they want to say, I know they want to paint it with a Christian brush, no, let's just say spirituality-based, then you should know, or at least believe, if you don't know, at least believe that you are being watched. So live your life like you're always being watched. Forget, we're not talking about cameras on you, or what's the instruments of the police now, your body cams and all that. What about the bigger eye, the eye that watches us all, so to speak? That should be more concerned about. Not a body camera, does somebody have you on the phone? And if you're acting in a way eradicates what you say that you are governed by, or as brother said, yeah, take religion out of policing. Because it's obviously people are hypocrites. I'm not saying the large majority don't live by that. But you got to go to the spiritual base. And just to end on this, regardless how we want to dress it up, regardless what title you want to put on it, it still goes back to the root base. And Charlie spoke on something talking about St. Patrick. Most people don't know nothing about St. Patrick. People, do your homework. And I'm not saying people from the Irish cultural diverse nation that we live in should not be proud of this. Go read up and do the studying on who really was St. Patrick. What's so funny about it, it's sad about it. I shouldn't say funny. Patrick wasn't even Irish. He wasn't even Irish. Huh. Did you know that? He wasn't even Irish. They got a myth that they say he rid the island or the area of what they call Ireland. He rid it of snakes. It wasn't talking about real snakes. It wasn't talking about real snakes. They were talking about anybody who opposed what he went back in there to try to push on people through, and I mean push, promote, and propagate, which was Christianity. It was a sense of inquisition in a way, intellectual inquisition. He went in there, and that's why when Stan, I'm glad you brought that up, about what did they do for Juneteenth. Again, I'm not here to badger them or beat them up or attack them, but you got, in particularly, African-Americans. Now I'm talking to y'all right now. Now you're wearing your green and all that. You're so lost, you'll jump in anybody's uniform, even though you and I haven't formed yet. We have the biggest problem of coming together, but you'll put it on just, oh, well, it's St. Patty's Day. It's saying, what does that mean to you? Do some research. Find out about that. Yes, the Irish brought that over here. They're the ones that instituted that into this cultural, I should say right now, damn near a cesspool, because people don't respect other people's culture. I'm not saying knocking the Irish, but again, they're the same ones responsible of instituting Halloween in this culture. Christian people, did you know that? And does St. Patty's have anything to do with your book? Now, you may say, well, we have St. Patrick's Cathedral. Well, find out who Patrick is first. And find out about this shamrock and the three-leaf clover and the father's son. I mean, they create stuff. They got myths. Don't get me wrong. They got pot of gold, but they also got fool's gold. Don't be a fool, because everything that shines, everything ain't glitter or shine ain't divine, okay? Because just like you got gold, you got 10 karat gold, you got 18 karat gold, right? You got 14, you got 18, and you got 24, which is the pure gold, which is too soft, you can't wear it. And the distinction between those different golds is how much has been mixed up in it. So the more it's been mixed up in, the pure it is. So let's go back to the base root of who we are. Spiritual beings called human beings who like to dress things up with all these titles and all these names, don't know the historical accounts, but be first to go out there and celebrate. Now, if you're Irish, I got it. This is a personal day that y'all take just like people in Juneteenth. I'm not knocking it. But I'm talking about everybody just jumps on the bandwagon, puts on a skirt, and going to blow some bagpipes. Have you ever understood that? Why would police and firefighters, why the bagpipes and skirts on? Where'd that come from? That shows you that the true order of police originally had nothing to do with people of color, even to this day.
Mm-hmm.
When the fallen soldiers fall in the police department or the fire department, here comes the bagpipes and here comes the skirts. And I'm not saying that in a derogatory way, saying it's some gay, some or a faggot or some you know, homosexual thing. I'm just saying study other people's culture so you can understand them better. It's not to look at people's cultures and to badger them and to make derogatory statements about understand it. And if you choose to follow, you choose to observe or to celebrate, that's your business. But I'm saying, people, please study and do some research on what you're following instead of just jumping out there like any mindless person who just, as they say in the book, one of the books, as they call it, the good book, you're like sheep led to where? Because we have this in-house confusion, and we have this, in-house confusions. I mean, people are confused. There's in-house fighting. There's in-house dissension. There's in-house conflict. You why? And that goes in every department, starting in your home. But just because somebody has a uniform doesn't mean you and I form. I'll say that. And that's when we got to get back to human relationships, supporting each other. And the problem with what Stan is saying, and I'm going to end on this, is you can't support people regardless of what they do and then say that you're here to serve and protect. So we're gonna support you even when you do wrong. Where did those lessons or teachings come from? From the time we were children, we was spanked or we was disciplined for doing wrong. So when you get to one of the higher plateaus in the society, being an officer, someone who's supposed to be a professional, somebody who is supposed to be courteous, supposed to be respectful, who is supposed to be our foot soldiers in the streets, oh, you can do wrong, and regardless of what you do, we're going to still support you? No, that's a cultural diversion of what I call delusion. And it's created in these departments, and it has to be addressed. You have six senses. You got your aspirin or your nightstick. You got your stun gun. You got your mace or pepper spray, as they say. That's three. You got a police dog you can call for. You got backup, which you can get other fellow officers to join in on you on the arrest or stop. And you have that ultimate weapon, service issue, whatever they give you, to that firearm. So you got six more senses other than the five senses you got. So create more of, let's say, a positive when you can. Don't create bad experiences when you don't need to, because you're going through problems. Don't take this stuff from home and bring it to the street. Don't do it. And I'm not saying they still won't do it, but you're right, Stan. We must address it. We have to undress it, and then we have to redress it. Can't just put on a badge and a uniform, but we're still around here badgering people, and me and you and I ain't forming an alliance to a safer society, a safer community, a true relationship. So when I see you as my brother, not just as a police officer. When you see me, as an ally to your zone or your area that you're working in, and you want to have a relationship with me, not because you're trying to pick my brain and use me as a snitch, because you really care about me. So we go back to doing simple things like that, we're going to continue having these problems. Thank you, brothers.
You know, Ty, you hit on something. You segue right into, because like I said, I like to give solutions and proposals for solutions. And, you know, some of the things I want officers, when I say officers, I mean particularly chiefs, to understand something. When you deal with these people in inner city communities, in low income communities, and to a degree, even middle class and upper income communities, and you present yourself as an officer, these are some of the things that you need to consider, because I'm going to tell you, this is how you're being viewed. I can tell you in the black community, when an officer meets somebody or interacts, this is the cycle of thought that generally will go through our head while we're sizing you up. The following, as it relates to minorities, African Americans, poor people, it's not good. It's not a good history. So they're already going to think, what does history show me about you? Personal contact. What contacts have I had with the police, good or bad? Those are going to have a lot to do with how I interact with you. Even though I'm just meeting you, I've met these other officers, whether in your city or not in your city. How did they treat me? It has a lot to do with how I'm going to deal with you. Then what are my observations? Not that I had a contact with you, but I watched how you treated that other person. That's going to have a lot to do with whether I want to interact with you or trust you or choose to interact with you. What is the lack of transparency given a specific geographic area, even the officers that work in the area? Are they sheltered, distant? Do they not have any type of communication with the public? And then finally, the distance from community issues. Now, and it's, and I'm not going to just throw police departments under this bus. I'm going to throw city governments under this bus, because the police department is directed by assistant city manager, mayor, and city council. When the police department is distanced from an issue, it's oftentimes a symptom that the political government within that city is distant from your issue. When people oftentimes say, well, the police department doesn't care, there are no resources here. Well, you need to look deeper than that. Go ask your council person. Why isn't he putting heat on the chief to put some more resources there? See, we're that visible part of the community. It's not always the officer's fault. Police officers on the street don't make any decisions. We react, we make decisions regarding your specific situation, but we don't have anything to do with the policies and practices of policing. We're following orders like everybody else. So you got the community that doesn't fully understand us because we're not as transparent and open as we need to be. But at the same time, the community has to be willing to accept it. If you run across an officer that's going to give it to you the way they feel, you can't get bent out of shape, and you need to accept it. And I think I can say this. This following statement I'm going to play relates to both sides of this issue.
Oh, I say it, again. You've been had. You've been took. You've been hoodwinked. Bamboozled. Led astray. Run on muck.
We're following folks who do not have our best interests at heart. We're following some folks who look like us that don't have anything in common with us. We're following folks who live like us that don't care anything for us. Everybody's got an agenda. Everybody's got a hashtag. And somewhere in there is the least. You know, I'm gonna go do my drop down, and everybody, Charlie, you got 2 minutes, brother, whatever, it doesn't have to be this topic. What's on your mind? What would you like to put out? 2 minutes.
Well, again, I want to thank you for your show. Thank you for you and Tyrone bringing out the topics that need to be discussed. My thing is this. I'm going to say education. I do. I had to speak to a senior home yesterday. I do once a month. I go in and talk with seniors. And I guess the one problem that I want to see addressed as a nation, as a community, we have to respect the elders of our community. I know that they're being warehoused in rehabilitation places or nursing homes or fancy names like, I'll leave that alone. But the fact is I would just like to see our seniors, the people that help build the communities around this country, being looked at more as an asset instead of a profit. Our families should look at seniors more as people that we can go and talk to as living history, not as just, just go ask your grandma about that. I don't know. Our kids don't need to go to computers to Google something. They could talk to the living history elements in their families, in their neighborhoods, and they just might find out things from a different perspective that the history books just don't tell you. And when I see all those glowing faces every month, one lady in my group is 97 years old, talked about how she was married for 65 years to her husband, took care of him for the last 19 because he lost his limbs to diabetes. That is caring. That is taking marriage seriously. That is taking your community seriously, because she did not want anybody to help her. She wanted to do it herself. But she also had to fight her government, because they wanted to take her house. These are the things that we should be concerned about. And why do I say it to you people now over the air? Is because one day you're going to get older. So unless you have a huge amount of money in your bank account and you've got a great pension or great investments, you're usually like the typical person here in these United States. You don't have all that. And people are going to go after what you have to enrich their pockets, not yours. Great job. Can't wait for the next topic next week, Stan. God bless you guys.
All right, Charlie. Appreciate you, brother. Like I said, for me, you know, before I let TK take us out, I'm just going to say, I know some people will listen. It's probably the first show you've listened to. You may say, this guy is angry. No, I'm not angry. I'm passionate. I'm paying for this. I don't pay for stuff that makes me angry. There are no sponsors. I'm passionate. I believe in what I do. If I get tired of it or I don't feel like doing it, there just won't be a show. But until then, I'm not going to get on here and make folks comfortable because I'm not interested in your comfort level. Right now, all of us are sitting around comfortable. So we're not shifting. We're not moving. As long as you're comfortable, you never move. You don't progress. Policing has been comfortable in America. Policing to get uncomfortable, to get updated. Officers, if I'll say this, if your life is surrounded by the blue family, if you're all about just those people with badges on, you're in for a rude awakening. And if God blesses you long enough to live 25, 30 years and retire, you're going to walk home from that police department, wake up the next morning, and after about a week when you don't have to go to work tomorrow, the first thing you're going to notice is that the phone don't ring no more. And you're not officer anybody anymore. You're just staying. And you're going to look in that mirror and go, who the hell am I? Where have I been the last 25 years? Nobody's calling me. Nobody answers my calls. Nobody visits me. Nobody wants to be around me. Maybe it's because the way you treated folks. You can say, well, I don't live in the community that I policed in. Yeah, but you know what? You were never out in the community that you live in, because you came home from work disgruntled by what you've seen, and you just stayed in the house and hung out with cops. This is an honorable profession. I do what I do because I'm sick of the profession being drug through the mud by a few miscreants and thugs and hoodlums and traitors that drag this profession, that is an honorable profession, through the mud. And I, for one, am not going to sit back and not call these people out when they trash this profession, and then want to claim Blue Lives Matter and I'm all about the badge or protecting the honor. Damn it, Fraternal Order of Police, if you want some honesty, you start holding some of these rogue officers' asses to the fire. You start speaking out against some of these killers. Start speaking out against some of these people who have broken the code of the badge. They're outside of the realm of being a police officer. They chose a rogue lifestyle. They betrayed that oath that they took. Stop giving these people a place of honor with those who are righteous and do the right thing just because you don't want to take the image of the profession. Well, like Malcolm said, I ain't going to play the quote again. I'm here to tell you the profession is already tainted. It's tainted by the blue silence that's loud. And don't think for a minute that people don't notice. The world has noticed it. The world is going, what in the hell is America doing with their police? Every day is something new. Yes, there are a vast amount of police officers. Yes, by and large, most officers are good. We say that, and I understand that. Well, they're supposed to be good. We're not going to reward them for being good. We're not going to reward them for doing their job. You're getting paid every 2 weeks to do that. We need to call out the weeds. When you go out there to your yard, you can't say, well, I'm not going to pick the dandelions because I got a lot of grass. Because when you don't pick that dandelion, guess what? You got two next week. And when it rains, you got 12 over here. Then you got more dandelions than you got grass. And then you, instead of saying these are weeds, you go, no, they're not weeds. They're just little sunflowers. And your yard looks tacky. We need to do a weeding process. If policing were an iPhone, we should have updated a long time ago. We need a new operating system. We need to do things different. If we say that the low-income areas are the crime areas, then let's go in and ask them what they think we should do instead of walking in like we have the answer. We're like a blind doctor that's qualified as a dentist trying to do open-heart surgery on a bad hangnail. We're floundering around thinking our title and our prestige is enough. Policing is enough. Well, our history ain't that good if you talk to black people, if you talk to minorities, if you talk to poor people. Oh, policing doesn't have the shining history that we like to say it does. I'm not saying the profession isn't honorable. I'm saying that the practice of the profession is questionable. At the end of fire hoses during the civil rights struggles, there weren't firemen at the end of those hoses. There were policemen at the end of those hoses. At the end of that dog leash at the Edmund Pettus Bridge, it wasn't a hunter. It was somebody with a badge. These are things. Has the profession apologized for it? Don't tell people get over it and move on. That's real talk. Yes, there are no officers here out here working today that have to endure that. But if we're not willing to talk about it, You can't expect people who have been through it to respect you. If they say, well, how do you feel about this? I don't want to say nothing. Time to let the officers know what you want. Let your department know what you want. Departments, start listening. We need to do a self-critique. We need to do an autopsy on this profession. And if your department in your city is great, God bless you. But those officers need to be speaking up on some of these things that are destroying the profession. I don't care if it's in California and I'm in Texas, or if it's in Boston, or if it's in Canada. If it's destroying our profession, we have to restore that honor from within. We can't trust the public or expect the public to trust us when we're silent on some issues, overly vocal on others. Well, we don't recognize the abuses within our system, when we don't refuse to recognize racial profiling exists because a vast demographic of officers don't believe, which never happened to me, so it doesn't exist. There's people walking around here believing God and never seen him. They're supposed to believe in ghosts and never seen them. They believe in UFOs and never saw a UFO, but they have a problem believing that there's things in policing that need to change. So this is real talk. This is how we do it here. And it's to take away the excuses. All of us need to fix some things. Whether it's race issues, you don't like white people, you don't like black people, poor people, cops, we all got some work to do because we all got to live here. And there's going to be police, whether folks like it or not. And there's going to be some officers to make some bad mistakes. That's in everybody's job. But it's our job. We can't afford to have a bad day. Our bad day, people may not go home from. Our bad day, people may end up wrongfully in prison. For years. Years. We see on these Facebook posts, this guy did 20 years for a crime he didn't commit, 15 years for a crime he didn't commit. But that's another show, because we have to dig into some of these DA's offices and this criminal justice system. I mean, that's for another show. TK, we got about 2 minutes, brother. Go on, take us out.
Well, I'm just going to, again, end on this fact that, you know, we can't expect a stable world or a world of stability if we got a bunch of people, human beings, emotionally, mentally unstable, and particularly those who we look to as leaders, world leaders, community leaders, local leaders, if you want to call it. Because the titles that of that empowerment, or those what they call powers of authority, if you don't use your power and authority to uplift the overall quality of life on earth, like you said, we all got to live here together, then it's a shame. You know, and I regret that people got those positions. It's embarrassing, matter of fact, because that's one thing that a lot of people want, that promotion. They want to be in a seat or a position of power. But once you get that power, do you abuse it? I mean, we talk about what happens when it comes to domestic abuse, where they say, well, the man, he's abusive toward the woman, he's beating on her, whatever. Well, let's take that in all aspects of society. Someone who's bigger, someone who's stronger, someone who probably shouldn't be doing that is still doing that in the home. Well, it trickles out. It floods out, if you want to say it. It spans or spreads out into the... in our society. You know, people who have power, again, it's a very tricky thing, man. You have to have some sense of good sense of stability and a good sense of, let's say, the best word I would say, confidence. Not cockiness. There's a thin line there. Confidence. And again, for all those officers, man, God bless them all. Pray for them every day, those who are out there doing the right thing. We're going to always be behind and be on the side, and if need be in the front with our officers, you know, and be an extension of what you do, because that's the first thing we need in our lives is safety. And when you take that vow and that oath to put your personal life on the line every day to preserve the safety of the society as a whole, yes, that is a very honorable thing to do. But as you also have that duty to serve and protect, make sure you don't forget yourself. What I mean by that, you have the mechanic who's always working on everybody else's car but abandons or neglects his own car. Proverbs says, don't neglect yourself. Don't abandon yourself. Don't avoid yourself. You need help on certain things. Don't try to play Superman, Batman, Kato, the Green Hornet. Don't get some help. You're not invincible. You're not God. You don't have to be shot in the street. You don't have to die in a car wreck chasing somebody. You can just go simply out of a heart attack of simple stress. So you must,
yep.
We all must learn how to not deactivate it, and I'm not saying suppress it, but we have to have ways, better ways of alleviating these stresses that we, in many ways, help create in our own lives. And it's by the way you deal with yourself first and deal with each other. Humility has a way more better way of making things better. When, of
Absolutely.
Course, when then hostility. Just like when you pull over somebody, you don't want them getting hostile with you. There's no need for you to get hostile with them. Of course, if they want to get it messed up, then you got to do what you got to do. I ain't got no problem with that. I had a situation this past week, and I told my brother this. I was in a sports bar watching the games, watching, you know, the March Madness is on his way. And a gentleman had gotten to a small, let's say, not altercation, but exchange of words with a woman in the spot. She had obviously been drinking a little or whatever she was taking. And, you know, I didn't say anything, and I observed the whole thing. Of course, when you're in a place like that, and we're in Connecticut, so there's no open carry. And at this place, they didn't search. So I'm always going to be very mindful and observant of my surroundings. Well, anyway, make a long story short, the owner had to tell the woman she had to leave because she was really getting abusive and threatening and all this type of thing. As she left, the guy that she had words with, he left about an hour later. And I simply said to this guy, be careful. He turned around, looked at me, and said, who said that? And I said, be careful, brother. You never know. Because we got some crazy people in our society. Let's call it what it is. I'm a straight shooter. I don't want no ice in my glass. I sure ain't going to come with no chaser. Well, he turned around and started to say to me he didn't like me. I didn't even know him. I just knew him by name. I really don't know him. He said he didn't like me. He said, what are you, a cop? People, I was wearing Officer Stan Mason's shirt. Behind the blue curtain, you know, Block Talk Rock Radio. He couldn't see the back, but he saw the front, which shows, as y'all know, his shirt has the badge on one side, a hoodie on the other side. And I'm saying that to say is did he come off at me because he thought I was a cop? And if he thought I was a cop, it's obviously he doesn't like cops, or he had a bad experience, or maybe had some bad experience with a cop. But I just told the guy, be careful, and it turned into a close to an altercation, but I kept my cool. And he said to me, well, I'm going to tell you this, and this was his words, I'm going to just keep it like this. You don't say nothing to me, and I don't say nothing to you. And we'll leave it like that, all right? But mind you, he said, I don't like you anyway. They don't even know the guy. But he saw that StanMason.com, and I realized that's why he asked me, was I a cop? I said, wow. So that's how, and I've never been a police officer. Got plenty of police officers as family and friends. But here a guy's ready to come at me, tell me he don't like me, and made the phrase, what are you, a cop? So we do have some serious issues between the community and policing, and we got to just do a better job to make it a better place, make it better and safer for all of us. And particularly Amen. Our officers, I believe we've lost 18 maybe this year already, you know, in the line of duty. So, I mean, families with lives who, you know, again, it's a humanity thing, man. It's not just because they're a cop. If you get past that just because they're a cop, they're a human being, a real people with real issues, real challenges, real problems, and we got to keep it real. And when you keep it real, there should be no fear in keeping it real. So come behind that blue curtain and tell the truth. Don't be in court where you're subpoenaed and now you have to put your hand on an oath of whatever or on a stack of Bibles or Qurans or any religious book you might believe in and say, I swear to tell the truth. Live that life every day you get up. Swear to tell the truth and nothing but the truth. So help me, God. And we need God's help. And I'm using the word God because we're in America. Most people can identify with that. And that's I'm going to end with that, Sam. Thank you for having me as your co-host.
Appreciate you, TKD. Charlie, appreciate you calling in the Facebook Live crew. G, Rashawn, everybody that tuned in, I appreciate you guys. You know, you can share these. You can go to stanmason.com. You can download all the shows, the most current shows at the top. If there's a topic or something that you guys want to talk about, you think would be a good topic, hit me up on Facebook, and we'll put it on. And if you give me a topic or an idea for a show, guess who's going to co-host? You are. So, you know, this, like I said, this is our show. So if you got something that you feel that's going to be constructive and proactive, we're not going to just vent and badmouth anybody. But if it's something where you have a solution to and it's something near and dear to you that deals with police reform and rebuilding police-community relations, hit me up. We'll put the show together, and you'll get to do it with me. But until then, we all need to stay woke. And recognize.
Oh, I say it, I say it again. You've been had. You've been took. You've been hoodwinked. Bamboozled. Led astray. Run amok.
And we'll see you guys next week.
Ladies and gentlemen, please sit back because you are now about to go behind the blue curtain.